Consequence Podcast Network.
This episode brought to you by the following patrons: Eddie, Karoon, Ori, Isaac, Sasha, Kate, Tristam, Dave, Brandon, Matthew, Adrenaline Shots, Dylan, and Chris. And Chris and all the patrons want you to know that you are a valued member of this awesome, loving, giving Horror Virgin family.
Bonus episode time!
Ready to talk about how Tommy Jarvis might be the best main character of any film of all time?
Oh my god.
Thank you for tuning into the Horror Virgin. I'm Paige.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your Horror Virgin, Todd. And with us today, as probably expected, because he joins us on all of our Friday the 13th episodes, is Jonathan Watkins from CinemaSins. And thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, hello.
I like how Jonathan agreed to be on all of our Friday the 13th like four movies ago, but maybe didn't think we would follow through with this.
He was for sure thinking like, yeah, sure, I'll do this. This podcast is going to fold after the second one. And then we keep calling him back, and he's honestly very gracious every time.
Yeah. These are super easy to rewatch. These are not a pain. I probably wouldn't agree to like Nightmare or Halloween. Some of those sequels are rough.
Well, we should say we watched Friday the 13th Part 5.
A New Beginning.
Right. This is the fifth one in our series. So, Mikey, what are your thoughts on it?
This may be my favorite horror franchise.
Really?
Okay, that is not quite what you said in our text messages. What you said was, this is your favorite 80s movie. I mean, in an era with Back to the Future, this is your favorite movie from this era.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes!
Yeah, fuck no. Fucking Indiana Jones. Fuck the good Star Wars movies.
When that girl is doing the robot in her room, I was like,
For
20 minutes, she's doing the robot.
Oh my god.
I had such a crush on Violet, though, when this movie was like when I was a kid.
Really?
Such a crush.
She's the only one that doesn't get naked in this movie.
Well, I had a crush on Debbie Sue Voorhees too, but I liked Violet. I liked the hair.
Yeah, I do think it's hilarious that Debbie's last name is Voorhees.
Wait, the actress? Her last name is
One of the reasons she was cast.
No way.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Okay, here's my evidence for... Okay, so this might be... I don't think I've watched a lot of the Friday the 13th, but every time we do an episode, I learn to love this franchise more and more. Because you know what you're going to get. And it really feels like that Jason really enjoys killing a lot more than Michael Myers. Like, his heart's in it. And you can tell, and it comes off in the movies.
I've always said that Friday the 13th doesn't have a movie as good as Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street. The originals.
Sure.
But as a franchise, it's way more fun.
Yeah.
I've been rewatching some Nightmare, and I'm digging some Nightmare. I think there are some solid Nightmare ones, but nothing this crazy.
Yeah.
This one is so bonkers.
I do feel like this franchise really just swings for like fun, like silly horror. Like it's not scary, but it's not scary, if that makes sense.
It's how many ways can we kill people?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it is in the 80s, so it's how many boobs can we show?
Yes.
And how many different ways can we kill people? And let's just have fun with it.
What's weird though is the next one is the one that feels like it's the most like a real, like a movie. Jason Lives, but this one probably feels the least like a movie. Like this is just cocaine and regret. That is all this movie is.
Cocaine in the morning after.
I am so here for it.
I thought I had seen this one, and it turns out no, I had only seen Jason Lives.
So
I got into the like early part of this movie and I was like, where's the lightning? And then was like, oh, that's not this one. And then had to watch the rest of this movie.
You're like, where's Jason?
Yeah. For the first like 40 minutes of the movie. Yes.
That's why the next one's called Jason Lives, because they were like, no, seriously, he's back in this one. We promise.
Yeah. We promise. Yes.
So is this like the Halloween 3 of the Friday the 13th series?
I guess, but it still kind of follows this. It's still a Friday the 13th movie, though. Halloween 3 is less a Halloween movie, you know?
Yeah.
And more a masterpiece. Yeah, yes, I hear you. Absolutely. I hear you.
Halloween 3 is way better than this, by the way.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, disagree. Yes, hardcore disagree. We just did Halloween 3 for our live show on Halloween.
This one's not unfun, and it's got like a lot of defenders, but I don't know. I've watched it too many times to count, so it's not like I won't watch it, but I don't know. It's one of my least favorite, but it's still like, it's just a blast. It's so crazy.
The pacing of this film is perfect.
I'm not gonna agree with you on that one.
I was gonna say, you and I might have different definitions of pacing.
Yeah. By pacing, do you mean nipples?
It so far has been my favorite of the franchise because it is just silly, stupid fun, and it's not scary.
And it's sleazy.
Oh,
it's very sleazy. It's very grindhousey. Which is it Danny Steinem? Is that the director?
It is. Yes. I've got some fun facts later on the level of nudity.
He was in porn, right, for a minute.
He was a porn director, and he basically shot a porn, and then had to
and then called it Friday the 13th Part 5.
Yeah, I heard on Crystal Lake Memories when he was shooting the sex scene in the woods. Apparently, that's at least got 2 or 3 more minutes to it that we never saw.
It was a full 3.5 minutes long, and he had to cut it down to 15 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But I have tons of fun facts on it later.
We'll have
but
to get
yes.
to it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I always felt bad for that guy because he came off like he couldn't last more than 2 seconds.
So yeah.
Not like me. I'm a 3.5 minute guy.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
Let's just get into the movie because we got a lot to get into here.
We open on a rainy night in the woods as a person runs through the forest in a yellow raincoat, kind of like the kid from It.
He's one of the Coreys, right?
He's Corey Feldman. Yeah.
He arrives at a graveyard in the middle of the forest, which has Jason Voorhees' grave clearly marked, painted on a wooden headstone, and very shallowly buried.
Is that from Part 4?
Yeah.
Well, that scene's not from Part 4.
Okay.
Corey Feldman was in Part 4, but this is Corey Feldman a year later.
Yeah. He hides in the bushes as two other people come down the path, and he watches as they try to dig up Jason's grave to get a look at him.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing there and why they did this. Like, they must have gotten super drunk and done this.
I don't know, but they only get like 2 shovels full each. Like, this grave was barely dusted with dirt.
Oh, yeah, it's like fingernail deep. Yeah.
They pry the coffin lid back and they're horrified. And I'm like, I don't know what you were expecting. It's a dead person, but it's Jason in full. I don't know why they buried Jason with the machete, too.
And the mask. He's fully decked out.
Full Viking funeral.
There's worms crawling out of the mask. He sits up and machete kills both men. He rises from the grave, inexplicably alive. He grabs the machete and walks towards Corey Feldman. He raises the machete and strikes down, but it turns out that it's all a dream. Yeah. And Tommy Jarvis, now many years older, wakes up in the back of a van from the Institute of Mental Health.
Can we talk about that? How old is he supposed to be? Because I think he's only supposed to be like 16, but he looks like he's 30.
He looks like he's 30.
Oh, I thought he was mid-20s to late-20s, at least.
No.
I thought he was
I think he's 20s. Supposed to be a teenager.
But correct me if I'm wrong, the early Friday the 13th took place like in the 70s, right? Even though they came out later, like they took place earlier, right?
No, not actually. The first one was 1980, so maybe it took place in 79, but then the second one's like 5 years later.
Oh, so he goes from being a 12-year-old to 32 in this movie in the span of a year.
This would be like 1993 if we were going by the actual timelines, but they're stuck in the 80s, clearly.
Right. I just love a world where they're like, in the future, technology hasn't changed at all.
Well, what you guys don't know is outside this summer camp for, you know.
I actually have notes on what kind of a place this is, but it's not a summer camp.
And are they at Crystal Lake? I think they are, aren't they?
It's near Crystal Lake.
So they sent this guy, this kid.
Yeah, I was.
Who has like trauma.
I want to talk about
fucking Crystal Lake. Back to Crystal Lake.
Yeah. His trauma is Jason from Crystal Lake. They're like, we're going to send you to a rehab camp that's modeled after a summer camp at Crystal Lake. It's called the Shutter Island Treatment.
I always just assumed that's not where it was, but then the sheriff says he thinks it's Jason Voorhees, so why the hell else would he think that?
Unless they were
at Crystal Lake. I mean,
it is supposed to be near Crystal Lake. It's a lot like Tale of Two Sisters, where it's like, hey, do you want to go back to the exact place where this all happens?
And then everybody's like, Tommy, just man up and go back. I mean, I don't understand.
Everyone is so mean to him. He clearly has PTSD and everyone's a dick to him. him.
Did you guys notice that when he wakes up from the dream and those two guys are driving him there, there's like what looks like fencing keeping him out of the front, and the guy in the passenger seat's just reading a porn mag? Reading is probably not the right term to use, but
I was gonna say Playboy, but it's probably nothing close to Playboy. It's probably it's probably like called smut or something.
Yeah, just ass juice or whatever it is.
That was Danny Steinem's favorite magazine, Ass Juice.
You could tell they get paid by the hour because when they get there, they're like, "We'll sit here all day."
Yeah.
Well, they don't haven't even gotten there yet because he wakes up in the van and then we cut to the credits where we're seeing them through the mask and they're very, very long.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. We come back from the credits and they're driving him to Pinehurst, which is a youth mental health facility in the woods. So this is something unique to this time period in history. So we covered these on Cult Podcast a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
They still exist.
Yes. They do still exist. They're a lot more regulated than they used to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the late 70s, early 80s, as the war on drugs kind of reaches a peak, many, many groups create these kind of facilities where they're called wilderness schools or outdoor wellness schools or CDU schools are the most famous kind. Some of them are on the up and up and are staffed with actual mental health professionals, but a shockingly large amount of them are owned either by religious organizations or cults, or just independent organizations that are not accredited at all and have no actual mental health professionals on staff.
And kids have been killed at these facilities.
Kids have been killed. Kids were widely abused at CDU schools. It is dark. Like, some of the stories that have come out of them after are chilling, but at this point in history, when this movie is being made in the 80s, nobody knows that yet. It's like, they're still this new hot thing, and they also kind of sometimes will refer to them, in the description of this movie, as a teenage halfway house, is what they say.
Mm-hmm. I do love that the Friday the 13th series called how bad these camps were going to be for children well before it came out they actually were.
This movie does no favors for these facilities.
But it does. Doesn't portray them nearly as bad as they are, because as far as this facility goes,
everyone that goes there dies.
Paige, the first like four scenes, one of the students axes and murders the other student.
That's not a Jason kill, quote unquote.
No,
right?
I know, and that's you know, but the facility itself and the people that running it, we do establish that he's a doctor. They have their own rooms. They are treated with respect. They aren't forced into manual hard labor, which is the case with a lot of those schools.
Yeah.
Where sometimes they'll contract those schools out to like work in factories and stuff. It's like real bad. So this is the best case scenario of one of these kind of schools, and a guy kills somebody with an axe. So like, keep that in mind.
Yeah, you get to just go like, you get to go have sex in the woods if you want. Like, you're good to
go. Yeah. Usually for a lot of these schools, they call it being gooned, where your parents hire people to kidnap you to take you to the schools.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
But he arrives at Pinehurst and they're like, hey, that must be the new kid. They're kind of watching the van come in. Everyone kind of comes out to see the van. It arrives and the driver comes over and opens the door and says, all right, everybody out. And he doesn't say anything. And then he just says, sit there. I don't give a shit. Like, callous immediately.
I do love how he's like, everybody out, but it's fully just one dude in there.
Yeah,
and he knows his name. Yeah. Like, who are you talking to? Anyway, but Pam, the associate or assistant director or whatever of this Pinehurst, comes out and says, you know, let's go.
You mean the only other employee besides the doctor?
Wait, was that guy a doctor?
Yes.
Matt is a doctor, and then they have...
There's the cook, too.
Gramps.
Yeah, I think he does other things, too. They only refer to him as Gramps, but...
Yeah, but it's the final boy's granddad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pam comes out, and she kind of coaxes Tommy into the house. The van driver makes a vulgar gesture at her as he drives away.
Well, and he also calls her doll, and then she doesn't respond to that, and so he like...
He like licks at her. It's real
that's right. Yeah,
it's like And then later this movie tries to play him as like a sex symbol in a scene that was actually supposed to be in 4 and then got used in this one.
Oh, this is not Sonny Bono? The guy that looked like Sonny Bono? That like showed up at the diner?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah,
Bobo
yeah.
Sonny Bono.
Wait, that's this guy?
That's this guy, yeah.
This movie just got better.
So Tommy goes into the house and she's asking him, like, how was the ride? Are you okay? He's not responding, but she just kind of like rolls with it and is like, I'll walk you through the house to meet the doctor. Yeah. And, you know, we'll give you a tour.
She seems like a good person, right? That's like, yeah, we're establishing her that way.
And I would say the doctor's a good guy, too, because he also is like, hey, we'll let you get settled. Here's how things work here. And then he's going through the file after and he's like, this kid has been through a lot. Yeah. And they have tried everything.
I'm surprised his brain is not fried from the drugs that they gave him. Not like
that they gave him. Yeah.
He's not talking like reefer madness stuff.
No, although that would have been hilarious.
That's of the era, movie. Though.
And that actor had probably just snorted a line of coke before he said that. So it's pretty funny.
I will say that Tommy only has like two lines in the whole film.
He has 24 words.
He only says 24 words, Paige?
I didn't even know he said that many. Did you find anything about if because they wanted to use Corey Feldman, right?
They did, yeah.
Would it have still been the same movie?
No, it would have been completely different. Yeah, I've got a breakdown of what that plot would have been once we get through this one.
One of my favorite interviews ever is when Corey Feldman's like, yeah, I really wanted to do that, but I had to do this movie, The Goonies.
Yeah, like that, and that's the reason why he couldn't do it, is because he was doing Goonies.
It's like, yeah, poor dude, man. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry you had to be in one of the best films of the 80s. Unless you're talking to Mikey, in which this is the best film of the 80s, yeah.
Mikey's probably like, what was Corey Feldman thinking?
Fuck Goonies.
He could have really, like, been on the map if he'd done this film. This movie is just bonkers from the jump.
Yes, it is.
And we haven't even gotten to the skeet doo-da-doo guys.
Yeah, we haven't. He walks into his new bedroom. He sets his bag down and starts unpacking. He opens a knife and hides it under his bed.
Yeah, why does he have a knife? He just got out of a mental institution and he has like a hunting pocket knife.
Yeah, how did that get through security?
I don't know. It's insane.
So he goes to put his clothes in the closet and there is a fake spider hanging down. He freaks out and Reggie pops out of the closet and is basically like, what, are you scared of a spider? And I'm like, he has PTSD. Yeah. Like,
you're the worst, Reggie. Although I'll say this, Reggie's fully 12 years old and by far the best actor in this movie.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so he's only 4 years younger than Tommy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So my whole thing was like, so is this grown man like roommated with a child at this facility? Like, I was like,
yeah, I don't think they're roommates. I think he was just hiding in there to fuck with him. Yes. Which I'm like, this is a mental facility.
Right.
Like, this is like in The Lucky One where they just let those kids freak out Zac Efron and then he choke slams one of them. And we're just like, I don't feel bad that he choke slammed you. We know he has PTSD. Everyone knows. Just leave him alone. Why is this happening?
Every line of dialogue in this film just creates more questions. Because then Tommy puts on his mask and scares Reggie back.
Yeah.
Yes. And we find out that somehow in the institution that Tommy was in previously, he's just been making complex latex masks.
Yes!
That's from the fourth one, because his character did create like special effects makeup. Like, that's an actual thing from the fourth one. And it may have just been, like, arts and crafts time. They let him do that sort of thing because...
You can't mold latex in arts and crafts.
That was my thinking, because as we found out from Halloween 3, it's a process.
Yeah. But the actor playing Reggie, that, like, traumatized me as a kid, because that was Dudley from Different Strokes.
Yes.
And I was watching that at the time. Granted, Dudley, I also got traumatized watching him on Different Strokes when he got kidnapped by the pedophile.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that that exists.
Man, yeah. 80s shows, kids do not understand how crazy those shows were. I don't know. It's weird shit, man.
As weird as the fact that he's unpacking multiple masks, and it seems like that's the only thing he packed. And we don't really see him change clothes all that much.
No, he's wearing the same outfit the entire movie. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, did he only pack masks?
Is this more than one day? Oh, I guess it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they have breakfast.
Well, he went into that institute as a child, and this is the only adult outfit he owns.
I guess.
That
yeah.
Could be.
They should have let him make clothes.
He has latex pants.
Hey, in 1985, man, that would have been all right.
Yeah. He comes out of the institution looking like a gimp. Was like, well, they only gave me latex. Like, I don't. All I know how to do. He's unpacking the masks, and then Reggie says, "So you're the new nut, huh?" And I'm like, "Why is this kid allowed to talk to people here?" And then he has to clarify. He's like, "I'm not one of you. I'm just visiting."
Yeah. As a mental health professional, what? I will say I found humor in the fact that all of these characters, from the helpers to the patients to the families to the neighbors, all of them say the exact opposite things you should tell people who are facing real serious problems.
Yes. I love that at multiple points in this movie, people were like, ooh, creepy, a loony bin. We should kill all of them.
Yes. Yes.
So many times in this movie. It is wild.
There's a reason there's a negative stigma for mental health issues.
Oh, I don't think it's because of this movie.
Are you
it's
sure?
It's a part of it.
You know what? I'm not sure. That's fair. You might be right.
So are Ethel and Junior the most realistic characters in this movie? They're so dirty. Like, you live by a lake.
Yeah!
Like, you have no fucking excuse.
They look like...
And they had the best makeup. Like,
yeah.
They look like they could be extras in Better Off Dead. And, like, that's saying something.
I like that the woman who played Ethel was, like, what, like, in her 30s or something? And they put, like, that terrible wig on her.
I thought he was her husband, and then she's like, you're my son. And I'm like, whoa.
I just don't know why they chose to give him a motorcycle. Like, nothing makes sense in the whole movie.
No. Well, anyway, so Reggie and Tommy run down from the bedroom because they hear the sirens. Everyone kind of comes out to the lawn, and it's the police bringing back Eddie and Tina, who have just been having sex on the neighbor's lawn.
Yeah, well, on their farm, yeah.
On property. Their property, yeah.
But Ethel rode up on the back of Junior's bike, and Junior looks like he's been mudding on a motorcycle.
They look like they rode in fresh from the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, the sheriff and the deputy were straight up like, before Ethel gets there, they're like, hey, man, we know you have like a crazy house, but you got to keep your kids from having sex on the neighbor's lawn. Wink, wink. We'll just keep this on the DL. And the doctor's like, oh, yeah.
I don't know why Ethel. I mean, it didn't take more than 15 seconds. I mean, how did that mess up their day?
I know, right?
Anyway, so yes, they ride up on a motorcycle and they are extra.
Yes.
They're in a completely different movie. Like a different movie invades this movie whenever they show up.
They're in a Mad Max movie.
Yes. They're in like Mad Max, Kansas.
Yeah, I don't even know because, like, you know, Friday the 13th will play off whatever's going on at the time, but I don't know what those characters represent.
The Dust Bowl.
The Dust Bowl. That was 85. The Dust Bowl was on everybody's mind.
I mean, I like it because they immediately are like, they're not like, keep your kids off my property. They're like, all of you should die in this place.
Yeah, yes. She says, I want this loony bin closed down.
As quickly as they made this movie, though, because this is less than a year, I think, after the fourth one. So it's pretty insane that it works at all, I guess, but yeah. These characters just, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just Spirit Halloween presents a hillbilly. So she threatens to blow everyone up with a bomb that she claims to have.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
That's technically illegal.
Yes.
She does it in front of the sheriff.
Mikey, it's illegal now because of this.
They were like, hey, if you are going to wear a dirty tank top, you can't say that you have bombs.
Yeah.
Blowing up a whole camp full of people with mental health disorders is an appropriate response for two of them hooking up on your lawn.
Yeah, unless you're Hitler, it's not really in line with what people do. So she, Mrs. Hillbilly, says, start the engines, Junior, and hops nuts to butts on that motorcycle with her son.
Yeah.
And they drive off into the sunset together to live a very happy, fulfilling life.
A very happy, strange life, yes.
Then Dr. Matt says, let's go back inside. The party is over. And he talks to the sheriff for a bit, who basically is like, look, I get it. And she's crazy. And you're doing good stuff here. But you've got to keep your kids from fucking on her property. And after they're like, yeah, well, okay, we'll handle it. He says, hey, I heard you got the Jarvis kid. And they're like, yeah, he came in today. And he's like, how's he doing? And they basically just say he's been through a lot.
Yeah.
Then we cut to what I believe is the next day. I think.
It's not really clear, but I assumed it was the next day.
I assumed it was the next day, in which the most baffling sequence of scenes in this film occurs.
There's so much I love about these scenes, though, Paige.
So we see a guy outside chopping wood, which at first I thought was Tommy, because it's one of the teens that we haven't really met yet.
Yeah, I thought it was too, but it's not.
He's chopping wood. Robin and Violet are hanging laundry, and the, I will call him token fat character, is standing eating a chocolate bar, being a walking stereotype.
Yeah.
Wildly offensive and strange in this movie.
Also, that the chocolate bar thing is a really odd thing.
And it's like melted down his chin. Yeah.
I thought he was developmentally disabled. Like he had,
I did too. He had
a, I thought so too.
I used to think that, but I don't think he is.
But when you first see him, you think that. That's what I thought when I first saw him.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, I used to think that the character was supposed to be that, but I think the dude's just not a very good actor.
I could read it like a mild intellectual disability. I could read that from this.
But he's got a chocolate bar in his hand. He's got each of his pockets is, and he also has one sticking out of his shirt. Like just like,
oh god, I didn't spot
there.
The hidden ones. Yeah, that's crazy.
He's got pocket chocolates and one just stuffed in his shirt, and he's like asking if he can help them.
That really is a thing. It's like alcoholics always have like all those beer cans all over the place.
Yeah,
there's people at work when I get stressed where I'm like, hey, so and so, I need a chocolate, and they like pull one out and I'm like, thank you.
The reason that I was kind of like, well, maybe he's not disabled and this is just a really strangely written character, is that he like tries to pull one over on the girls where he's like, mm-hmm. I'll help you, you can have half my candy bar, but then I have to keep the other half to eat it. But then he goes over to the guy chopping wood and he's like, can I help you? I really want to help you. I have two chocolate bars. Don't tell the girls. Yeah. You can have one of them. And I was just like, look at him working his own little chocolate bar economy.
He's a chocolate bar hustler, baby.
Chocolate bar hustler. The girls blow him off and they're total dicks. And
well,
I'm just
they're
like,
total dicks because he grabs the white sheets with his chocolate hands and he like ruins their job.
And I think maybe it's because I was reading this as someone with a disability.
So was I.
That I was just like, hey, like he wants to help. Like, don't be dicks. Like, that's ridiculous.
Okay,
you know,
but they all have a disability, like a disorder or a thing.
Sure, but if this person is legitimately intellectually disabled and everyone just yells at them all the time, I'm not cool with it.
Same. I'm not defending that. I'm just saying he did get chocolate on the cheeks.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not cool, but I guess I just don't read it that way anymore. But either way, I mean.
Once we get past like his interaction with the girls, I don't think the movie reads that way. I think the movie just presents him as annoying, which is also strange. But he goes to the guy chopping wood. He offers him a chocolate bar. The guy basically is telling him to fuck off.
No, he did something better. He takes the chocolate bar and then chops it in half with his axe.
Yes.
Why would Dr. Matt let this guy chop wood? I mean, right there. Intense. You put him like on cooking duty.
He definitely has anger issues.
He's just working out his feelings, okay? Because he's not even like making firewood. Dr. Matt was like, you see that big stump over there? Just hit it repeatedly till you feel better.
Yeah, give the axe duties to Stutterer.
Or someone who doesn't already want to kill people.
Right. Because he literally turns with this axe and just murders that guy.
Yes.
And can we say yet that oddly enough, he's like the one guy that gets away? Like, because I mean, that's the craziest thing about this movie for me.
Oh my God.
Like, if you want to look at this as a revenge story, it makes no sense. He doesn't get revenge on the one person. I mean, I could see him blaming Dr. Matt.
Oh, yes.
And Pam.
So I think it's more Dr. Matt. And he's like, I'm going to punish Dr. Matt because not only did Dr. Matt let two kids run off and have sex in the neighbor's yard, he let another kid murder another kid.
So why was he punishing 50s greasers? Because they were from the past?
Exactly.
Because they time traveled in that car and it's against the laws of nature.
Isn't there a theory though this movie also takes place around Halloween?
I mean, that would make a lot more sense for the way that other people are dressed and why Reggie's brother looks like an extra from Thriller.
My headcanon is he started murdering and just was like, I love this. Like, I'm gifted. And like this is my calling.
Oh, that's dark, Mikey.
Well, he like tries different ways and he goes back and forth and like He becomes a very seasoned killer in like a day.
He has a fascination with eyes, though, and that I couldn't really figure out. And for me, it was the giveaway that it wasn't actually Jason, because Jason just kills people. And I'm just like, why is he gouging so many eyes out? Like, what?
Because they witnessed the crime.
Yes.
Even if you look at this as a whodunit, it's like the worst whodunit ever. Because, I mean, right after when he sees the body, he immediately has that freaked out look on his face. I mean, you know it's him. And then you don't see like half the people get killed because they have to have them as suspects.
I'm actually going to say that I wasn't paying too close of attention to
me
that scene.
Neither, yes.
At the end, when it's not Jason under the mask, I was like, so who is that? That's not Dr. Matt.
And then there's another scene right after that, the 50s, the time travelers, after they get killed, Roy's like, you know, did you say something to me, Sheriff? And then when he's about to leave, he like looks back at the camera like all weird.
See, now that makes sense. But like at the time, I was just like, this is written badly.
Well, that's
because if that guy hadn't come in at the end and been like, turns out it was this one character that you only saw twice in the film and he has a motivation that we never explained. And also he was this person's father, even though that seems impossible. And who would know that?
But I hear people say that like they like, well, I like this one because it's a good murder mystery. Like, no, it's not. Like,
no.
Have you seen any other murder mystery before?
I like this one because it's a terrible murder mystery. I like that a guy comes and was like,
no, it is.
That extra was Jason because of this reason.
So they're loading the body away. The EMTs show up, or the coroner show up, I guess, and they're asking, is there someone we should notify? And they're saying, as far as we know, there's no immediate family. His mother died giving birth. We don't know where his father has been, and he's been shuffled through the system, but he was a good kid. And one of the coroners is a total asshole, which is, I think, why he gets killed at some point later, where he forces the other coroner to pull the sheet back and literally look at the body, and it clearly upsets him, and then they cover it back up.
Right, because it's that coroner's son.
Yeah.
I love this scene because it's so insane. Because he lifts the sheet. It's grotesque, horrified. The paramedic's horrified. The other paramedic who lifts the sheet, he's like, such a pussy. I was oh my God.
Well, because the girl starts screaming.
So they cover him back up. And then we cut to a broken down car in the middle of the night with two greasers for no reason that never come into play again. They are purely to pad out the kill count. One of them, Vinny, is trying to fix the car.
Yeah.
His friend Pete is being an asshole. This is where Vinny is kind of afraid because they're out in the darkness and Pete is teasing him. He's like, are you afraid of what happened at the loony bin? And this is where he says, all those loonies should be killed off one by one.
This movie is really sensitive, which I like.
Yeah.
Okay, so headcanon, I think the guy was just like getting dressed and like getting ready to start murdering and heard the guy say that and was like, you know what? I'm just going to murder these guys too.
He's just over in the bushes changing into the Jason outfit.
Yeah.
Overhears it, goes over, kills him.
He was actually changing out of it to try to help them with their car until they said that. Then he changes back into it to murder them.
He was nice enough to let the one kid go take a shit, though. That was cool.
Yeah. I thought that was insane that he went into the woods to take a crap.
Yeah, it's like, aren't you guys headed somewhere?
Yeah, you're going somewhere. Fix the car and go crap in a toilet.
Maybe he had some enchiladas from the same place. Demon got his.
Some van-chiladas? Yeah.
They just came from Demon's van.
My favorite is he goes out into the woods to take a shit and he hears something and he turns and shines a light on it and it's just a bunny and he says, hi, little fuck. And it just made me laugh every time. I was like, what?
I'm going to start greeting everyone that way.
Hi, little fuck.
Hi, little fuck.
Well, it's better than what he said in the car where he's like, Vinny, I need you to fix the car faster. Those cunts aren't going to wait all night. And I'm like, wow. And they shouldn't. Like, yeah. Headcanon, I thought they were going to meet two of the girls at the loony bin at the halfway house. But I don't think that we have no idea where they're going. It's
no, but that's why I love this movie, because none of the characters that get killed I even recognized from scenes before. I love that. It's like a haunted house. You go to a new scene and I'm like, okay, these are other kids at the camp, I guess. And this guy wants to have sex.
Well, while he's taking a crap, we see somebody light a road flare and shove it into the other guy's mouth.
God, yeah.
Which wouldn't kill you. It would just badly burn you.
Well, he doesn't even try to dodge.
Yeah, he doesn't try to dodge. How did somebody get that close to your face with a road flare and just like hole in one it?
I haven't had a good hole in one in a long time.
Oh, Mikey, quarantine's been rough for some people.
So Pete comes back from taking a shit, singing about how dumb his friend is for not fixing the car. And he walks past his friend's dead body laying over the engine.
Yeah.
He gets into the car, tries to start it a few more times. It doesn't start, doesn't start. It finally turns over. And just as it does, Jason reaches around from the back seat and slits his throat.
Right.
So, but also, even if he doesn't know his friend's dead, he sees him under the hood. Why would you try to start the car?
Yes.
You don't know where your friend's hand is or head. You don't know anything.
Also, headcanon, Jason fixed the engine while he was waiting for that guy to come back from taking a shit.
Yeah, that was weird too. Like, how did he get to work?
So from there, we cut to Tommy back at the house with Nightmare on Elm Street 2 levels of sweat, reliving what has just happened to him.
Yes.
He gets up, looks in the mirror, sees Jason behind him and takes pills, turns, and there is nothing there.
Yeah.
We cut downstairs to where they're all having breakfast. And Gramps puts a bunch of eggs on a plate and hands it to Reggie. And at first I thought that was just Reggie's plate. And it's like a trough of eggs. And I was like, and then he goes and sets it in the middle of the table. And I was like, oh, that makes much more sense.
Yeah,
okay.
It's for everybody. Yeah.
But Reggie asks if he can go see his brother who will be in town tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and Gramps also tells him to go get everyone for breakfast.
Right.
And Reggie just walks to the door and yells. And Gramps is like, I mean, I could have done that.
I could have done that.
I'm sorry, but I just caught that you said Nightmare on Elm Street 2 levels of sweat. That's amazing. And I was just thinking, this is the same year. So, like, this was just a sweaty year for horror movies, apparently. Yes.
That was the year of El Nino.
It was El Nino.
And everybody reminiscing about the Dust Bowl.
El Nino is Spanish for the Nino. Nino. Oh, man. So the kids come in for breakfast. They've accidentally set places for Joey and Vince, who was the guy who killed Joey.
That is fucked up. Like, the way they attack her.
I know. Right? It's an honest mistake. And they're like, you dumb bitch. Why did you put those fucking plates out, you idiot? And she's like, I just listened to my music. I don't know. I was on autopilot. Leave me alone. I felt so bad for her.
I was doing the robot. I have robot program tasks, and one of them is set out plates.
And then the other guy's like, yeah, they're dead. Get used to it. It's been like a day.
I know. It's insane.
And then he turns. He's like, do you want to go hook up?
Yeah. And then Gramps even says something like, I don't think they're going to be showing up to breakfast. Like,
what are you talking about? Of course not.
They're dead.
Yeah, somebody yells at her, you don't set a place for a dead person. And she just says, I said I was sorry.
I know. It's like an honest mistake. And they're like crucifying her over it.
And that's how you know that this is not the first murder between students that happened here.
We've only got so many plates.
Only at the X Mansion do students die as much as this camp.
You mean Professor Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters?
Yes.
Yes,
I do.
So Tommy finally comes down to breakfast. They ask him to go check on Eddie. As he turns, Eddie comes down in one of Tommy's masks, scares the shit out of him.
I love this so fucking much.
Eddie, like, pile drivers Tommy through a table.
And they just wailing on him, like, punching him in the face.
Murder number two, right hat, right here.
Yeah. And they just kind of, like, pin Tommy against a wall and calm him down. And he just kind of, like, eyes rolls back in his head, calms down.
Yeah, he has PTSD. Like, he's,
you know. So we cut to Ethel and Junior's house, where Ethel is trying to cut the neck off of a chicken.
I found this scene almost the most disturbing of the entire movie.
Yeah, it's gross. This is where he's eating the soup.
And this is also, she's not, we call it fabricating a chicken. She's not taking the chicken apart correctly.
I don't think she's trying to, Paige.
I don't think so either.
He's also eating it with like a large like wooden spoon or something. It's the weirdest thing.
It's real strange. I just have in my notes, who are these people? She hears something outside and she thinks it's a coyote in the daytime. Which I'm like,
In the mountains.
If it's a coyote during the day, you have more problems than just it trying to eat your crops. That thing has rabies.
Like, well, she goes up to it like with a shotgun to the door, and that's where she sees that older dude there, and he's like, I'll work for a meal, and she
I haven't eaten in 2 days, I'd like to earn a meal.
Right. Yeah. I love that. And then it kind of got like a sexual vibe.
It
he's
did.
Like, I'll do
it
anything.
Did get sexual. Yeah, and
it did. Yeah.
I now know where Junior came from.
Just a drifter that wanders up.
It yep. sucks for that dude, though. If he had just walked like half a mile over, he would have been at the institution and actually had like...
They probably would have just fed him, yeah.
They would have given him a trough of eggs.
Yeah.
I'll do anything for a meal, ma'am.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Our only rule is please don't kill anybody.
He goes out to clean, and then she's like, that's the ugliest son of a bitch I've ever seen.
Which he's not. He's just an old guy. Like, there's not, he's not really ugly that I would say. Not, like, distinctly ugly, I guess. But.
Tell us about your attraction to this man, Paige.
Well, I love a man who knows his way around a coop. I personally have watched too many horror movies to ever let strangers into my house like this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the second he was like, hi, I'd like to earn a meal, I'd be like, keep it moving, Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah, we're not right. buying the murder that you're selling today. Like, it's no thank you.
Man, this would be so stupid.
But it's the best movie that the 80s ever produced.
I think so. I think so.
According to Mikey, yes. Yeah.
And, like, what are her standards? Like,
her son, because she compares him to her son, where she's like, you're not pretty yourself. And I'm like, he's your son. You shouldn't find him pretty. Like, that's, you should not be attracted to him.
But you should be like, you're a handsome boy. You can do anything you want to do if you so choose.
Yeah, I realize that's what your mom may have said to you, but I think serial killers also get told that sometimes.
Well, she definitely would have made me wipe the dirt off my face.
Yes. We cut to the sheriff at the site of the greaser murders, who's basically like, I want every inch combed through thoroughly. Bring back anything you find. And this is where Roy, the coroner, asks, are you talking to me? Mm-hmm. This is that scene. Then he says, it looks like we have a maniac on the loose, huh, sheriff? Then we cut to a car squeals into the gas station and does donuts and calls for Lana. This is the guy driving the van. This is Sonny Bono.
Yep. Yeah.
She says, sorry, Buster, we're closed. He wants a takeout order of her with nothing on it. Real upsetting. She goes into the bathroom and she's talking to herself in the mirror. Or no, I guess she was talking to him, like calling in like, hey, Lana, do you want Billy? You have to wait a few minutes. And then she comes inside and she's alone. And I'm like, why was she talking in the third person? Why was she acting like Lana was someone else?
Yeah, that's a very strange. Good question. Yeah.
She goes into the bathroom and just like flashes the mirror where she's like changing.
It's showtime.
But that seems like very performative because she says it's showtime and flashes just herself. That seems unrealistic for what women would actually do in that situation.
And I guess they didn't sell bras at Crystal Lake.
Yeah, which her back would be in a lot of pain. But you guys have unlocked a fun fact.
What?
Where Showtime was not originally written into the movie. She had just seen a bunch of plays by Bob Fosse and thought it would be really funny. So she pitched it to the director that that's what her line should be when she takes her shirt off. Originally, she wasn't supposed to say anything.
I'm sure Danny Stiles was like, whatever. Just whatever. Show your tits.
Yeah, he was like... Yeah, whatever. Do whatever you want, man. I'm just going to be behind the camera. It's fine.
Well, I don't know why she didn't get the Oscar that year. That's amazing.
And the Oscar for strangest tit reveal goes to...
It's showtime.
They don't even give it to her name. They just say...
Going back to the brassiere thing, man, no, because Debbie Sue Voorhees isn't wearing one either.
None of them wear a bra. And I'm not kidding. Your back would hurt. Like, yeah. If you're never wearing one, it's not fun. Especially because most of these ladies have pretty sizable fun bags. And so...
That's a technical term.
That must have been a Dr. Matt policy. He was like, all right, ladies.
The underwire is a safety risk. So you turn in all your bras. But here's your axe.
So we cut back out to the car where Sonny Bono is doing cocaine.
It's Bobo Sonny Bono. It's not really Sonny Bono.
So she gets dressed up. She hears a crash out in the restaurant. She walks out to see it, and her cat is freaking out. Meanwhile, we cut outside. Sonny Bono gets an axe to the head.
Yeah, to the back of the head.
A very fake head.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a department store mannequin. It's just...
He, like, all of a sudden has a full head of hair, too. You're like, what's going on?
He's got one of those little yellow and black bullseyes, like a crash test dummy, just right in the top of it. So back inside, she picks up the cat, lets it outside, and she runs over to the car, which is now empty. She gets in. She checks for Billy, doesn't see him, finds the cocaine on the floor, picks it up to do cocaine herself, sees Jason's boots and the bloody axe, gets out of the car, but no sooner has she gotten out of the car that she takes an axe to the stomach and she is dead.
Yeah.
That's the closest that the movie comes to being suspenseful, though. That always gets me when she sees the boots.
The thing that I couldn't figure out for the bulk of this movie, because Jason almost always uses a machete, like that's his thing. We see him with axes, cleavers, and I couldn't figure out. I was like, why does he have an axe? Where did he get the axe? And now I realize he got it from the guy, like from the body of the kid, because he's the coroner.
Yeah, that's the son's murder weapon.
That's the same axe, yes.
Yeah,
you're definitely asking the right questions, baby.
So we cut back to the house where Tommy is back in his room watching the chickens out through the window. He sees Eddie and Tina going off to the other property to get down. And then he sees Jason outside, but he rubs his eyes and then Jason is gone. So we cut to the police station. I assume the police chief, the commissioner, whoever.
I think it's like I always thought it was the mayor.
They do call him the mayor.
Okay.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah.
Do
they
Maybe really? that's why I thought it was the mayor.
There you go.
I mean, but he's the mayor of Crystal Lake, so like he's the mayor of summer camps. Who cares?
he got the mayor by winning a limbo contest.
He's like, we can't close the beaches.
Yes. So he says, get me the psycho responsible for this mess. What the hell is going on here? This is a small town. Small towns are supposed to be safe. And this is where the sheriff is like, I know who it is. It's Jason Voorhees, which, by the way, he has no reason to think it's Jason Voorhees.
No.
Well, and here's another thing. If they're at Crystal Lake, if they're close by there, then that guy saying that there's never murders here is bullshit. There's been a ton of murders there, right?
It's almost like every year, like clockwork, we put out more death.
Yes.
It's like the Cabot Cove of Lakeside. Yes. Seriously. All three of the Murder, She Wrote fans listening to this are like, hell
yeah. I got it. I was here for you.
It is at Crystal Lake, but it also doesn't seem like... It's so weird. They didn't think a lot of things through, except for the cocaine.
What?
Yeah. It's cocaine thinking of just like, whatever, no one's going to care.
And Mikey fully did not care.
I didn't.
This still is his favorite movie of the 80s in an era that Footloose, The Karate Kid, and Cocktail came out.
The motherfucking right stuff.
This is definitely better than fucking Cocktail, okay?
Dude, The Thing came out in the 80s.
The Thing, Mikey.
Among
the
like
thing.
Six other John Carpenter movies that are better. Okay, Prince of Darkness, They Live.
Yes. Okay, yes, the 80s had a lot of good films. But this is maybe the most 80s an 80s film could be.
Okay, that is fair.
So the sheriff says Jason Voorhees, and everyone is basically like, you're crazy. We cremated that guy.
Yeah.
He is dead. And he basically tells him that his ass is on the line. And then the sheriff literally just like chucks that ashtray at him as he walks out the door. And it's glass. Like, that's blunt force trauma waiting to happen. So we cut to the yard where Tina's doing laundry again.
Yeah.
And Eddie surprises her and basically is like, come have sex with me over in the yard where we're not supposed to be having sex. And she's like, we can't. But then she's like, we can. Let's go.
We totally can. Let me bring this full on bed sheet.
Yeah, they run, which is probably why they were cleaning it today, was from the last time. It's just their designated fuck sheet.
It's got mud and grass stains all over it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why? Like, don't take a black light to it. But
that's why she was doing the laundry that day, because Robin and Violet were like, yeah, we're not cleaning the cum sheets anymore.
Your laundry is always a little crispy and we're not here for it. So they run off into the woods. He's got a joint.
Holy shit. When he pulled that joint out, I thought it was a condom at first.
Yeah. No, a condom would be responsible.
I know.
Yeah, there's no condoms in this movie.
Yeah, I thought that was a condom too. I was so confused when I found out it was a joint. I was like, why is the joint square?
Why is that guy smoking a condom?
It is. I mean, it's too thin to be like a good joint, but.
But thin enough to be a great condom.
Oh, Mikey. Mikey.
So we cut back and we see a shot that shows that someone is watching them through the leaves, and it's the guy from the chicken coop, or who's cleaning the chicken coop, who was too ugly for Ethel.
The drifter.
He gets stabbed by Jason, and then we cut back into the sex scene where Eddie gets up and he says, I have to wash up. And my thought was just like, where? Like, what? You're right by the house. Just go back to the house. Like,
but he doesn't. He goes to the lake.
Yeah, you know what I'm never going to wash my junk with? Lake water.
Thank you. Yes. You're just asking to get pond syphilis. It's just the worst. So while he's done washing, Jason comes up. Well, we get a long, long shot of, I think this is Debbie Voorhees, right?
Tina,
yes. Yes. Of her laying there topless.
Yes.
And she looks up and it's lawn shears coming for her.
Yes.
And she gets stabbed with lawn shears. We cut over to the pond where Eddie is washing up, and he comes back like he took a swim. But he comes back over to where they were laying down in the clearing, and she's very dead because the lawn shears went through her eyes.
Oh, and he like stuck them in her eye sockets and then closed the shears. So it's like a slice across her face. She looks like she has Geordi's visor from Star Trek.
Yes. Which we're about to get Geordi's visor part two.
Yes.
Because Eddie freaks out, backs up against a tree, and then Jason puts a strap around his head across his eyes and then like crushes his eyes, like crushes his head, which like I don't.
That's why Geordi needed a visor. He's very kinky.
We cut back into the house where Reggie is getting ready to leave. Pam is going to take him to see his brother, but Tina and Eddie are missing and everyone's worried. So Dr. Matt basically says he's going to stay at the house, wait for Eddie and Tina, but he does tell Tam to take Tommy with her because they think it'll be good for him to get out for a while because he, like, I don't know, has been standing around sweating and not talking to people.
He's like, take Tommy out of here. I don't really want to be alone with him.
Can he keeps him staring. With child? He keeps making masks. And I don't... So they all hop into the truck. They pull up to a trailer park and Pam and Reggie get out.
Yeah.
Tommy decides to stay with the truck. They get to a van where Reggie's brother is living, and he looks like he has stolen Michael Jackson's clothes or is dressed as, I think it was Spider from Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah, he does sort of.
He's in Return of the Living Dead.
Okay, it is Spider then. I was not sure.
Yeah, it's Miguel A. Nunez Jr., yep.
Okay.
And he's dressed the same in this movie.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, well, it's the same year, so he might have been filming at the same time.
He literally just walked over to this set from the last one.
So he introduces Reggie to Nita, his girlfriend, and then Reggie introduces him to Pam, and he's like, she's my girlfriend, which like alarming.
And Pam just goes along with it like, that's okay, question mark.
Weird. We cut back over to Tommy waiting by the truck, then back to the van where they're like, do you want enchiladas? Do you want pizza? And he just lists off so many foods. And I'm like, A, you don't have a refrigerator or a stove or anything in that van.
Or a microwave.
Yeah. Where is this food coming from? What are you talking about?
Yeah, he has a buffet in his van.
They might have been smoking pot earlier, though, and just went to like five different drive-thrus.
And just got everything, yeah.
That's actually a food truck.
It is now.
So we cut back to Tommy, who now stands underneath the flickering trailer park sign. A motorcycle pulls up, and it is Junior, who just literally immediately is yelling at Tommy and scaring Tommy and basically just saying, you're a crazy from the loony bin. My mom is going to chop you up into little pieces.
Yeah.
Do you hear me? And they end up fighting and he just hands Junior his ass. Like,
it's awesome.
Yeah. Tommy knows karate because it's 1985.
Yeah.
True.
Everybody knew karate.
Yeah.
He went to the Daniel LaRusso film school. And
because there was another movie that came out in the 80s called The Karate Kid that was better than this.
Yes.
Mikey.
Was it?
Also, I don't know if you know, Bloodsport came out in the 80s. Also
that's
better
true.
Than this.
Yeah. Bloodsport, better than Karate Kid.
Yeah. Agree. Hard agree.
Okay. There's so many things I love about this movie, but one of them is like, why are the two characters in the van the guy's brother and the girlfriend in the woods visiting Camp Crystal Lake in a van and only wearing leather. That's not very good camping.
They're not camping.
Yeah, I don't think they're camping. I think they specifically came to see Reggie.
Yeah.
But they're going to sleep in the van.
Well, yeah, they're going to sleep in the van. So they don't.
Yeah, but why wouldn't they just go to the institution?
Right. Nothing makes sense.
Who cares?
But best movie right. from the 1980s.
Yeah, right, Mikey?
So Pam hears the commotion. She yells after Tommy. Tommy stops fighting and runs off, and then Junior rides away. At this point, I'm like, why do people keep fucking with the kid with PTSD? Like, this is a bad, no one is nice. They get in the car and try to follow after Tommy. We cut back to the van where Reggie's brother is going to shit himself because of the enchiladas.
I mean, that's why you don't eat van-chiladas.
So he runs into essentially what is like a porta potty near the at the trailer park.
Yeah.
And Nita, his girlfriend, is like shaking the bathroom and they're singing to each other.
Okay, so before that, he's like, oh, you're gonna get a bitch. You're gonna get a bitch. Like, I thought his lines were so crazy.
I always remembered him as being like a bad guy. Like he was like kind of a mean person or something, but he's really not. He's actually really sweet, except for that one line.
I know, it does feel out of place.
I wonder if that's what I just always remembered as a kid.
That's their pet name.
I thought it was joking. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it probably was now. But as a kid, I think I was just like, ooh, he's mean.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
obviously have a very intimate relationship if they're willing to pray pranks and talk to each other while someone has diarrhea.
I don't care how much I love you. You're not going to talk to me while I'm doing that. Nope. Especially in an outhouse.
Yeah, I have to be able to relax and just let my body like do what it does naturally. I can't be talking to somebody.
Sounds like you guys have never had salmonella where sometimes you're like, I'm dying. Please bring me things that will stop me from dying. And it just, you know.
I'm with you, Paige. Sometimes you just got to like talk to somebody while it's going on.
Mikey, you can call me anytime.
Do you think we haven't talked while I've been pooping?
This is a realization I was not expecting to like have right now. So,
So the bathroom shakes again. He thinks it's her. So he opens the door and she is dead outside the door. Her throat is slit and he goes back into the bathroom where Jason then stabs through the walls of corrugated steel and just impales him on like a sharp pole.
That's frightening.
It is. It's pretty gross.
So the truck carrying Pam and Reggie pulls back up at the ranch where they find out that Dr. Matt is gone and George, who I think is the cook. I think that's the first time we actually get Gramps' name.
Yeah.
We also find out that Tina and Eddie haven't come back either. And Pam asks, where did Matt say he was going? He said he was looking for Tina and Eddie. So they also realize that Tommy hasn't made it back either.
Right.
So she puts Jake in charge, who is the one who has a stutter, basically tells them Reggie needs to be in bed asleep by the time she gets back. We cut over to Ethel and Junior's property where Junior comes riding in screaming that he hurt me. And he's just riding in circles in front of the house on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Screaming.
And the mom reacts like this happens a lot.
They could be completely cut out too. That's what like they're yeah. clearly there to pad the kill count, but their actions have no bearing on the story. Really at all?
No.
They kind of pad the runtime too, though, because yes. they give them like three scenes.
Yes. As he's riding around on the motorcycle, he is decapitated.
When he got decapitated, I literally said aloud, thank God.
Me too, because yeah. the noise was really bugging me.
He was honestly almost as bad as Franklin from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh yeah.
But so she basically doesn't notice that the motorcycle and everything has been, you know, turned off and he's been decapitated. So she's calling out to him, basically saying, I knew you couldn't pass up my stew. And as she's calling out, we see a knife come through the window in front of her and it stabs her in the head and she falls into what is, we're supposed to believe is her stew, but it was full of flowers, question mark?
Yeah, it's like when a child makes stew, like yeah. a play, like play cooking.
Yeah.
The whole thing had a weird sexual vibe. I don't know. I'm just glad we're out of there.
You mean Junior and his mom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I knew you couldn't resist my stew.
I don't like it.
So Pam is driving through the woods alone, looking for everybody else. She stops the truck and ends up running into the woods on foot.
Yeah.
We cut back to the house where Jake and Robin are watching a movie and he tries to put the moves on her and does it I would say in a respectful way.
I think he does. He tries to lay out his feelings, and he's like, I feel more than a friend with you, and I want to make the love with you.
Yeah,
it felt like what Mikey would say to a woman he was interested in.
Mikey is stuttering, yeah. Ladies!
But this would all be on text.
Right, and yes. Then so would her laugh. Ha, 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 ha,
ha, ha, ha. It made me so sad that she laughs at him.
He runs upstairs crying. He wipes tears out of his eyes.
Yeah, but then he's like, immediately he's going to try to get Violet, who he screamed at breakfast.
Yes, yes.
You know, maybe she'll hook up with me. Like, I doubt it.
It's a numbers game, guys.
without him trying to go to Violet, like if that hadn't happened, I felt so bad because I was like, there's a way to say no without laughing at him.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't taken it well after that, then sure, he's not a great guy and we can hate him all we want. But instead, he respectfully was like, I like you. Would you like to do this? And she just laughed and he cried. And then he went up to have sex with the house robot.
I thought he was joking.
Mm. I think she just got caught off guard and was just like, wait, what? You know, and just
yeah, because later she's talking to herself and it seems like maybe she did like him and... I mean, too late now. But so he goes upstairs to cry. We see lightning crackle outside. And then he goes to Violet's door where there's a crazy sign next to her door. I don't know if anyone read it.
No playing handball in the hallways.
It says positively.
Yes.
No handball playing in the hallway, which I have to assume referred to Eddie and Tina.
Or masturbation in general or something.
Yeah, yes. We can't do it in the hallway. We can't do it on the lawn.
We got to go to Ethel's farm and fuck there.
Yeah, so he knocks on Violet's door. We open it to reveal that she is just listening to music super loud, doing the robot by herself.
Which is so great.
By the way, that song is badass. Psycho-wise.
Yeah. Okay. He closes the door and is immediately cleavered in the face.
She only has one robot move she does over and over again.
Yeah, right. She's doing the same 3 to 4 robot moves facing away from the camera.
Guys, it's called practice.
Yeah, I think she's assuming there's going to be a break in 3. And she's working on her audition tape.
Jason comes in and is like, bring it on. And she's like, it's already been brought.
Where does he go, though? Like, when she turns around?
So here's what I cannot figure out, because there's only one staircase really in the house. We kind of established the layout of this house.
Right.
In order to get up the stairs to kill Jake, he would have had to pass Robin, who stays downstairs, but Robin doesn't know he's there.
Also, Robin's having to like share a room, I guess, with Tina, maybe.
I think Robin and Tina shared a room, yeah.
And Violet's got like this giant room,
to herself. To herself. And she's just like wallpapered it with pictures of random people we don't know. It's not like Tiger Beat. It's like she's just going through catalog magazines and putting up perfume ads. Yeah. It's crazy. That room is nuts.
Her family pays more.
That could be, actually, that's a thing in the real world version of these schools. So he cleavers Jake in the hallway. We cut downstairs where Reggie is asleep on a couch, ostensibly next to Jake and Robin. Like, not the same couch, but another couch in the same room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's why she laughed. But so she kind of tucks him in on the couch, and then Robin goes upstairs to go to bed through that same hallway where I guess she completely misses the massacre that happened in that hallway.
I guess.
There's no blood. There's no bodies. Nothing. Uh-huh. She goes into her room, immediately gets topless, and she talks into her mirror where she's like, you're so stupid, he liked you, basically. And then she goes to bed again topless with the blankets just right below her boobs.
It's bedtime.
Yeah, I thought that was ridiculous. I mean, it's sort of like a college dorm setup like you talked about, right?
Yeah.
She's definitely sharing a room with somebody. I just don't think she'd go to bed topless.
I just thought that was how women slept in 1985.
But so she turns, and apparently when she got into bed, she didn't notice there was a body there, because she turns and Jake's body is next to her facing her.
Which I felt like he did as like an extra taunt. Like, I heard Jake trying to hit on you, so I'm going to put him him in the bed next to you because that's hilarious.
And it's not like bunk beds are like doubles. I mean, the bunk beds are very small beds. Like,
right. Yeah. It's probably a twin, you know? So like, how did she not see it? Then he stabs up from the bottom bunk through the top bunk with his machete, which at this point I'm like, how did he now get Jason's machete?
Yeah.
He keeps that on him all the time.
But he's not Jason.
Well, there's more than one machete.
You mean in the world?
Yeah.
That's your defense. They make multiple machetes. So
he went to a hardware store. He bought shears, a pole, an axe, a machete.
Every other weapon has been a weapon of convenience. So the shears were there because the guy was using them to clean up around the coop. So that's how he got the shears. The axe was from the crime scene. The cleaver's from the kitchen. How does he now have a machete? Where did it come from?
Maybe we miss in a scene. Maybe Gramps, when he killed Gramps, Gramps had a machete. I don't know.
I will say that I think maybe Tommy Jarvis's room, where he had Jason's mask and a machete.
We also don't know how he, because he doesn't have those till the end.
Tommy also somehow has Roy's mask at the end, which makes
no
sense.
Well, that's what I mean. That's when he has them. He doesn't have them now.
He's like, hey, guys, can I keep the mask?
Sure.
That's not evidence.
You guys, stop ruining this movie by asking basic questions.
Yeah. Stop ruining the greatest movie of the 80s.
By asking really simple questions. You're ruining it for me.
In a time period where Return of the Jedi came out.
Yeah. Romancing the Stone. What your other podcast is named after.
Well, now it's called A New Beginning.
Romancing the New Beginning.
After he kills Robin, he goes to Violet's room, where Violet is doing those same four robot moves over and over and over and over and over again. Yes. He comes in, she doesn't hear him or see him. He chokes her and then stabs her with the machete. And at this point in my notes, I just have, I feel bad about this because these kids aren't necessarily bad people. Like,
they're not.
Yeah, in some of the earlier Friday the 13th, those camp kids are hot trash. And so you're just like, do it. Machete them. Stick the arrow up through the bed. I'm here for it. But in this one, these kids seem kind of genuinely nice, and they're just being chopped to bits.
No, they are. They are. And like Gramps? Like, yeah, you kill fucking Gramps? Come on.
And Dr. Matt. Like, Dr. Matt is negligent, but like, machete to the face negligent? No.
And he also has that no bra policy, which is weird.
Yeah, that's why he got him.
See, if Violet let his son do the laundry, he'd be alive.
Maybe.
How does he know that? Don't ask questions.
Yeah, he doesn't. It's
like he came back and asked people questions.
Do you think the killer's that guy who interviewed all of us?
So Reggie gets up and walks through the kitchen and up that same staircase, knocks on Tommy's door, opens it and there's nobody there. Lightning crashes, revealing that it's all the bodies in this room, conveniently still topless.
Yes.
And positioned so that you can still see those knockers.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because you know the way they shot it, that kid is not actually seeing what we're seeing he's seeing, right?
Right. So he screams. Pam's right behind him. She asks him what's the matter. She looks into the room. She sees all the bodies. She grabs Reggie and she runs out of the house immediately. Smart move.
Smart move. Yeah.
Can we talk about this scene really quick, though? Because I thought Melody and Kenneman was fine up until this point. But in this scene where she's going like, Reggie, it's me. It's Pam.
Pam. It's me. Pam.
What's wrong? And then for the rest of the movie, she's like that. It's the weirdest. It's like, I don't know if she just had some coke. I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
Her acting style is very different.
But reportedly, she and the director did not get along. Like, they
really
disliked each other. So they run out of the house. Jason busts through the door after them, machete in hand. They run out through the woods. They come upon the ambulance from earlier, basically the coroner's car, and they stop, and the other driver, the blonde guy, is dead in the back. Jason is right behind them. They take back off through the forest. Pam screams for Reggie the entire time, giving away her position.
I do love that Reggie is wearing sneakers and she's wearing like high heel boots.
Yes.
So Reggie just fully leaves her. Like he runs as fast as he can. And then she's like, Reggie.
Yes.
Reggie, where are you? And he's like, I am gone.
But
Tommy also fails here too, because Tommy should be a part of this, but they want you to think that he might be the killer.
Yeah, he He's the red herring.
Yeah, well, and the thing that's a little frustrating is they don't do any of the work to set up those red herrings. They just expect you to kind
really,
of...
Really? Yeah. Really, nobody knows there's a killer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. Because, except the police know because those 50s greaser time travelers died. But other than that...
yeah.
Those
None of the people
friends.
At the institution know there's a killer.
Yeah, and it's really not until she's running through the forest where she finds Matt's body, which, by the way, is dead from a railroad spike to the head.
I saw that.
Is that what that was?
Yeah. Yes.
Which, where's the railroad in Crystal Lake?
I don't think you guys have watched American Pickers.
That's a good point.
You know, they do make railroad spikes in America. That's Mikey's defense.
Yeah.
He raided a barn that just had all American Pickers style antique weapons.
Is that barn supposed to be the barn from Friday the 13th part 3?
I think it is.
It has to be, right? Because there's even like, it's like part of it's been decimated, like from where all that damage was done.
Well,
right.
And you also see the noose that hung him in that movie.
Yeah.
But it's still being used. There's still hay bales. It's like people are still using it. And they're like, leave that noose up. It's pretty cool.
Maybe it's so confusing.
So people know that Jason died here. So she runs past Matt's body with a railroad spike. Pam gets back into the house, closes the door, still screams for Reggie. She turns as Reggie's grandfather's body is thrown through the window at her.
That was so insane. I laughed and also like jumped and laughed. It was so crazy.
In his room. Roy that much bigger than Gramps?
Like, no, yeah.
You gonna throw somebody?
And his eyes are missing again, which, yeah. Like, why? Yeah. She runs back outside. I don't know why she went back into the house at all, but she runs outside. Jason follows her. She falls. He advances on her super slowly, giving Reggie time to drive a bulldozer out of the barn.
This is my favorite part.
And I will agree, one of the best parts of the movie.
True.
I will agree with that.
He knocks Jason down, and Jason seems like he's dead, but he's not.
Of course he's not. And they walk right up to him like he's not going to grab their leg. Like,
but Reggie comes out with that tractor, and he's like, get away from her, you son of a bitch.
What's crazy to me is I'm like, it's not sharp enough on the end to actually hurt him. Like, it just knocked
him. Oh, no, but he's bleeding when he stands up.
So they kick him in the face a couple times.
Yeah.
He stands up. He's bleeding from the bulldozer, hitting him basically across the torso. They run into the barn. He walks after him. It sounds like they're hiding in a supply closet. He opens the closet and she comes at him with a chainsaw. Then they
I love
fence with it, basically.
Oh my god. I mean, chainsaw would beat machete, and she does like slice his arm as they're like fencing with it. Yeah.
Reggie's cheering from the top like it's WrestleMania and not caring that people know where he's hiding, apparently. The chainsaw runs out of gas. So Jason gets up and comes after Pam. She throws the chainsaw. Here comes Tommy for no good reason, because all he does is just stand there.
Well, he's been running continuously since he beat up that redneck.
Yeah.
So he's fully out of breath. So out of breath that he stands there until Jason comes up and slices him across the chest.
Yeah, while Pam makes it up into the hayloft, which, by the way, has a fixed ladder. So, like, all they've done is given themselves nowhere to run. They climb up into the hayloft, and they're just like, he'll never find us. I'm like, unless he climbs a ladder, like, he's coming right after you.
Yeah, they've made it easier for him.
So he slices Tommy across the chest, which snaps Tommy out of it. Tommy grabs his knife out of his pocket and stabs Jason basically in the dick.
Yeah, it's like upper thigh.
Then Tommy scrambles up into the hayloft, and Jason just follows them up there because he totally can. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah,
because
he's mastered ladder technology, Paige.
Right.
But also, like, they could have, like, kicked down or anything. They don't even put up a fight. They could have thrown down hay bales or anything to slow him down.
Nothing.
Instead, they're like, let's hide up here.
Well, Tommy's kind of, it looks like he's bleeding out in the hay. So he plays dead, essentially. So Jason doesn't, he walks right past him. But the other two are hiding. Jason spots Reggie. It's kind of like Tommy's scene from the beginning where it's, you know, a young boy and Jason's coming after him with a machete. But Pam hits him with a pipe. And then she looks out of like the, there's like a door up at the top, like a giant window. And below there's like a bed of spikes. So Jason lunges for her. She moves. It looks like he falls, but he's hanging onto the ledge. They go to check and Jason grabs Reggie's leg, Tommy gets up, he grabs the machete Jason dropped and mortally wounds Jason, who then falls onto the spikes below. The mask comes off, revealing that it's the other coroner in the Jason mask, aka Roy. We cut to Pam and Reggie are at the hospital, sitting in like the waiting room. The sheriff shows up, and this is where we're like, by the way, it was Roy. Turns out he was Joey's father, which, by the way, they show a picture of Joey present day wearing the outfit he was killed in. Where did he get that photo?
He's got like a chocolate bar in his hand.
Yeah, like, well, and they're like, he hadn't seen him. He wasn't in his life. Where did he get that photo?
But I'm so glad they monologued this part, because like the camera cuts to the maskless face. And I was like, yeah, no idea who this is.
Not a clue.
No information on that face at all.
Yeah, yeah.
We also reveal that he had been keeping articles on Jason Voorhees for a long time. So like, it's almost like he saw it as his chance to be Jason, but he was already kind of obsessed with Jason.
Oh, he's like, oh, finally, they killed my son. I can go do this.
Yeah, he fully did not care about his son. We know that. So he just used this as an excuse.
But he cared about his son to keep a current photo that he would have had to, like, steal, question mark? Why is it here?
They apparently kept that noose in a barn for 4 years.
Nah, so that's true. But yeah, so this at this point, I was really mad. I was like, this ending makes... It makes more sense if it was actual Jason than the actual ending of this movie. If you were like, by the way, somebody snorted Jason's ashes and that makes them Jason, I'd be like, that makes more sense than the end
that
of this movie.
That sounds like Jason goes to hell, so that works.
And it sounds like a movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down
a
with
a better movie
Jason's
from the 80s.
Yeah.
No such thing.
So...
In a decade with The Last Starfighter, you say this.
The Last Starfighter is so good. Not better than this, though. I'm kidding.
Welcome aboard, Paige. Welcome aboard.
No, nope. I'm not on your side. So Pam walks into Tommy's room to visit him, and she wakes him up. I'm like, let him rest, dude. Like, he got slashed across the chest. But he wakes up and stabs her with the machete, which turns out to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Then... he wakes up again in the hospital, at which point I just typed in my notes, so was the Roy part a dream?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I was like...
And again, he's Nightmare 2 sweat style, just like drenched, like he went swimming in his bed. He sits up and Jason is at the foot of his bed, but then Jason vanishes. Tommy pulls out his IV and walks to the mirror. He opens a drawer under the mirror and Jason's clothes are in the drawer, including the mask, which basically would have been Roy's clothes.
Right.
He hears Pam's footsteps. She hears a crash from inside the room. She comes in. It looks like Tommy has jumped out the window to escape, but as the door closes behind her, we reveal that Tommy is wearing Jason's mask and holding a knife, which I don't know where he got that knife, behind her. And
that's the movie. So what'd you guys think about it?
Best movie of the 80s.
I don't think it's the best movie of the 80s.
E.T. came out in the 80s.
In an era with Top Gun, I refuse to say that this is the best movie of the 80s. And I don't know, the 20 other movies we mentioned from the 80s.
I mean, RoboCop, Predator.
Predator, Mikey.
Mikey, you son of a bitch.
What if I told you this is the worst movie of the 80s?
It's not that.
It's not Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Well, you guys are just kidding. Personally attacking me all throughout this podcast.
In an era with Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, this is not the worst movie of the 80s. No.
I think there is a case to be made that the cocaine level ridiculousness of this film rivals House 2 as... One of the biggest Mikey movies I've ever seen.
This is very much a Mikey movie. This movie is bonkers. This movie is weirder than Planet Terror, and Planet Terror has 20 minutes missing out of it. I mean, but it is fun. It's fun because it's nuts.
It's so fun.
Yeah, I like this movie. Like, it's not very scary. It's way over the top silly, and it's painfully watchable.
they planned on Final Chapter being the last movie, and then it was a huge hit. So they were like, well, shit.
Yep.
And then they had to come up with something in like 4 months. So
we got to make seven more.
If you think about it that way, I mean, it's kind of amazing it exists in any form.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
That's crazy.
Paige, do you have some fun facts for us?
I do.
Hit us with your fun facts.
Before launching into them, I do want to read the tagline that appeared when I watched this earlier today.
Oh, yeah.
It just said, this time he seems to have set his sights on the young patients at a secluded halfway house, and more than a few of his teen targets end up in half, in quarters. You name it, Jason does it.
That's a really, really long tagline.
It's so strange. So, from Peter Brack's book, Crystal Lake Memories, The Complete History of Friday the 13th, they did detail that there was a ton of hardcore drug use on set, both directors and production staff and actors. So cocaine was flowing and some other harder stuff too. So it's very likely that most of the drugs you see in the movie might be real.
Yes.
It's a weird thing to get excited by, Mikey.
I don't know why.
I don't know. Now, originally, this was supposed to set up a new trilogy of films with a different villain for the series, basically with Tommy becoming the villain. But it had a disappointing reception and a steep decline in box office returns because Part 3 and Final Chapter had done so well that in the next one, they basically retcon this whole movie and Jason Voorhees is brought back as the killer for the next one. Now, Friday the 13th, A New Beginning was actually cast under a fake title called Repetition. So it was cast as just a murder mystery. And many of the actors in the film were not aware that it was a Friday the 13th movie until they showed up to set, basically.
Really?
Yeah. Among the people who were unaware was the lead actor, John Shepherd, who in preparation for the film had spent several months volunteering at a state mental hospital to prepare for the role.
When what?
Found out that it was Friday the 13th, he was really disappointed and didn't want to do it, but couldn't back out of his contract. So that's why he's not in the next one.
Oh my
God. Oh, that's so funny.
The reason he tried out for this movie is because a friend at seminary told him to. So once he found out it was Friday the 13th, he was extra mad. And then, yes, he gets very religious after.
Oh my God. And all the drug use and stuff going on set, he must have been really having fun.
He did not have a good time.
The 24 words on film are probably the only 24 words he said on set.
Probably. As we kind of mentioned, Corey Feldman was only able to make a cameo appearance because he was filming Goonies, which was released that same year. So the way they filmed it is they only filmed his two scenes. So that's why you don't see his face in the first section where you only see that close up because they filmed it in his backyard with a rain machine.
What?
They just kind of like stuck him in one of the bushes of his own backyard on one of his days off from Goonies and just shot it close with a rain machine.
Oh, wow.
This is the only entry in the franchise to feature a hockey mask with two blue triangles pointing downward, as opposed to the more common three red triangles pointing upward.
Ah.
I did notice it was a different mask. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't it the actual Jason mask, though, when he sees, like, when he thinks he sees him?
Yes. It's like they used both, but then the one that we get close-ups of when it's actually somebody killing people is the wrong one, which is a little...
I think it's because the guy who actually is pretending to be Jason just had that hockey mask, and it looks somewhat like the original one, the real one.
Right.
And in Tommy's, like, dream memory, it is the real one. I think that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Would you guys watch my dark reinterpretation of Ninja Turtles where Casey Jones becomes like a Jason-like figure and the Ninja Turtles have to hunt and kill him?
Yes. I just want to see Casey Jones kill people with a cricket bat.
Yes.
No, he would use a machete.
Where do you get the machete? Oh, yeah, I forgot. There's more than one machete.
Director Danny Steinman, when asked about this film, has said, and I quote, that he shot a fucking porno in the woods out there. You wouldn't believe the nudity they cut out.
I just remember in Crystal Lake Memories, one of the actors talks about getting on set the day they were shooting that sex scene. And he was just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yes. Because originally that sex scene was 3 minutes long, but the ratings board forced them to cut it to 10 seconds. And Deborah Voorhees, who played that role, actually lost jobs later in life when schools realized it was her and discovered her scene in the film because she is fully nude. About a month prior to the film's release, the ratings board demanded that 16 scenes featuring graphic sex in this film be edited or removed in order to merit an R rating instead of an unrated or X rating.
16?
16, the film.
Damn. Scenes, not minutes.
Scenes, which could be trimming scenes too. And the film ultimately required 9 different re-edits and trips to the ratings board before finally being granted an R rating. And in 2009, the horror website An Arrow in the Head chose Deborah Voorhees' boobs in this film as number 3 on their list of top 10 boobs in horror movies.
Classy. That's very classy.
I feel like she would tell you that it wasn't worth it. And allegedly all of the women in this movie come out and kind of said that they were embarrassed about the level of nudity that appeared in the film. They thought it was going to be much less.
Was she a teacher? Is that what you just said? Schools weren't hiring her?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
It is kind of sad. Well, and especially because I think they filmed a lot of stuff thinking like, oh, they're going to cut most of this out, but they just need enough to like cut it together.
Yeah.
And then it all made the final cut and as much as possible. And they literally cut to the bare minimum that they would allow them have. Like, so I think a lot of the women in the movie appeared nude and weren't necessarily ready for how public it was going to be and how much of that nudity was going to actually make it in.
Oof.
So Tommy's opening dream was different in the original script, and it definitely made him seem like more of a suspect later on. So the movie originally was designed to really, really structure him more as the killer so that they could start a new trilogy. And when it was originally going to be Corey Feldman, it was going to start where the fourth movie or final chapter left off, where Tommy's taken to the same hospital as Jason's corpse. Then in a sudden fit of psychotic rage, he ends up attacking half the hospital staff, trying to get to the morgue to find Jason's body to prove to himself that Jason is dead. Once he finally finds the body, Jason rises from the autopsy table, and immediately after this, adult Tommy wakes up in the van en route to the Pinehurst house, where he then is the killer for the whole movie.
Ooh.
If you are a Twin Peaks fan, I personally am, Sherilyn Finn was originally considered for the role of Violet, but turned it down. Yeah, she turned it down to do Just One of the Guys. Gina Gershon and Darcy DeMoss were also considered to play Tina, and they both read their parts with the producer and the director, but ultimately were not cast. So, yeah, those are our fun facts.
Well, thank you for those fun facts. All right, well, let's do some box office.
Let's do it.
So, this movie came out in 1985. What do you think the production budget was for it?
I saw it while I was doing fun facts, so I will recuse myself.
$500,000.
No, I would guess it was like $6 million.
It was $2.2 million.
Wow.
And it came out March 22nd, 1985, and it was number one the week it came out.
It made money.
It did. So it was number one, like I said. It made just over $8 million. It beat Porky's Revenge, Mask, The Last Dragon, and Baby's Secret of the Lost Legend. So that was your top five that week, but it won the week at $8 million.
This movie is Porky's Revenge, essentially.
Fair enough, yeah. Just with a murderer?
Yes.
So what do you guys think it went on to make in its total box office run?
Like 20, maybe 21 million.
What do you think, Mikey?
I'm going to say 15.
Okay, Paige, do you know already?
I know, yeah.
Okay, so it is $21.9 million.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It went on to make money. It is currently the sixth highest grossing Friday the 13th film in the franchise, which to me is insane with how insane this movie is.
It made more than the next three.
Yeah.
So
yeah, which is interesting because Jason Lives is the next one, and it did make more than Jason Lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did. No, it definitely did. At that point, people were just like, eh.
Just to throw this out there, another Corey Feldman movie that also came out this year, The Goonies, made $62.9 million. So I think it was a good call for him to do Goonies and not this movie.
Me too.
But that's box office. So Mike, is to the scary scale.
Yeah, it's your scary scale. Yeah. All right, scary scale is our scale 1 to 10 of how scary we found the film when we watched it today. It's not a rating of quality, but it's just a rating of how scary we were. Our one example is Ghostbusters, and our 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's go with Paige.
Hardcore 1.
Jonathan?
No, it's a one.
Todd?
It's a one for me as well, but mainly because you don't really see the deaths. You see like the buildup to it, and you don't actually see like him stabbing somebody. It cuts away. Like, there's nothing really super scary in this movie.
Agreed. I also will give it a one.
Yeah, that is not a surprise at all.
But it's a 10 in my heart.
Well, that would be the quality of it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. In an era where our number one on the scary scale, Ghostbusters, came out, this is a 10 in your heart, Mikey.
Ghostbusters is my like one of my all-time favorite movies.
Well, one of them. And it's or it now was. On a list with this movie. Oh, man. All right, so this week you guys made me watch Friday the 13th Part 5. And of course, we already said next week what we're watching, which is Midsommar. Now,
oh my God.
I know. We're going to be digging into it. I do want to say the next time we will see another Friday the 13th movie will be August 13th of next year. So it's quite a long haul until our next one.
Oh, man.
But Jonathan, hopefully you'll be available in 9 months for that.
I got to wash my hair or something that day. No, actually, no. This is, yeah, it's my favorite one probably. So
yeah,
no,
Jason Lives
it.
Is pretty fun. Yeah.
Awesome. I can't wait. It's going to be
I can
insane.
Talk about non-Friday the 13th movies. Just throw that out there.
So, Jonathan, where can people find what you do?
I work for CinemaSins. Yeah. So we're on YouTube. We have three channels, CinemaSins, Music Video Sins, and TV Sins. I also do a podcast with Aaron Dicer and Danae Hughes called Behind the Sins, where we talk about everything that happened that week on the YouTube channels. And then we usually end up just talking about like our kids and shit. It's really fun. No, seriously, we have a blast. I hope you guys come and listen to us. And you can find me on Twitter at SamLoomis13.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really great.
That is something that has been with me like ever since I started with email and stuff like back in college. Like I've always used Sam Loomis in some form. I don't know. I don't even remember why at this
He's
point.
He's used it 6 times.
But it was funny on Twitter. Somebody was asking me something and I was talking about how I really liked the first Halloween movie. And they were like, yeah, I know. I can see your name on Twitter. Like, I just didn't even think about it.
Well, awesome, guys. Check out everything Jonathan does over at CinemaSins. You probably already know what CinemaSins is, but check it out if you don't. It's obviously awesome. Paige, Mikey, and I do another podcast called Romance in the Pod, which we would love you to check out and rate and review. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot like this, but we're looking at romantic and romantic comedy movies, and they're honestly scarier than a lot of the horror movies that we do. If you want to follow all of us, Paige is at Rampage Wesley everywhere, including TikTok, except for Twitter, where she is just Paige Wesley. Mikey is at MRandolph24 everywhere, and I am at Todd J. Awesome. Obviously, if you want to check out our website, we're at horrorvirgin.com. If you want to help financially support the show, please do. We are at patreon.com/horrorvirgin, where you can literally get hours and hours of bonus content that's available right now for you to stream and view and all of that stuff. Plus, you can be involved in the listener requests and all that stuff that goes on the Patreon. But if you can't afford to financial support the show but still want your daily free content, join that Horror Virgin Facebook group that we pretty much link every week. But if you search Horror Virgin on Facebook, you'll see it. We're like the biggest group there is that is called the Horror Virgin Facebook group. So we're sort of easy to find or whatever. But that's it, Paige. Take us away.
So that's going to be it for us this week. I'm Paige.
Mikey.
Jonathan, say your name.
I'm Jonathan.
And I'm your horror virgin Todd, guys.
And keep it ooky spooky.
Yeah.
Have a great week.
Bye. Jason Nerds.
Consequence Podcast Network.